Blog Talk Radio.
This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Good morning, everybody. I am Glenn the Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Jamie Jennings from Phoenix, Arizona, and you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for January 23rd, 2013, episode 578, brought to you today by our friends at Back on Track Products. Good morning, horse people.
Morning. Today is Wednesday.
Hey, everyone. Happy hump day.
Happy hump day, baby. Here's to another week. Halfway done, the downhill stretch has finally begun.
Daddy, I want another pony.
What do they call Wednesday hump day anyhow? Innocuous jibber jabber.
That has to be Chef.
It doesn't sound like it, doesn't it? That has to be. It mellows you out. And Wednesday's kind of a mellow day because you're just trying to get through it to get to Thursday. Well, I got something. I got a news story here that has nothing to do with horses, but it's somebody that I want to come over to my house. And I don't know why she's in trouble, but Susan Warren, also known as the cleaning fairy in Ohio, was back in police custody today, but this time it wasn't for breaking into homes. Apparently, she went to a home on Branston Avenue and started shoveling the people's driveway after the snowstorm yesterday. And the police got a call that there was this strange, suspicious female shoveling their driveway. So the police showed up, and they found out that Ms. Warren also had an arrest warrant from another town where she was brought up in charges in November of 2012 and sentenced to 1 year probation for breaking into a Westlake home, cleaning it, and leaving a $75 for the homeowner on a napkin. She said it wasn't uncommon for her to go into homes and clean them and that she never had a problem before that. You know, if this woman wants to come over, clean my house, and leave me $75 every week, I have no problem with that.
Seriously, can I give her my address? I mean, really? That'd be great.
She got arrested for it.
And she's shoveling their dress. It sounds like Monica from Friends, the, like, super clean freak one. That's what it reminds me of. There are girls out there that understand that reference.
Well, let me tell you, Susan Warren, you want to make a trip down here to Florida, I have no problem with you cleaning my house for free and leaving me $75. No problem.
You know what? I mean, I pay for that at work, so people pay for that. So I think that it's just about right. Just about right that she should probably do it for free. Like, she shouldn't even have to pay.
Now, why exactly she doesn't get a job with a cleaning service and actually get paid to do it, I'm not sure. I'm sure there's some issues there, but yeah.
Clearly a little
unknown. Because she has a criminal record, that's why.
One other thing, Jamie, I saw a post on your Facebook page the other day, and I went, what? It was I'm trying to find it. I'm trying to find exactly what you wrote because I thought it was funny. Let me pull it up here. This is her post. 5 months pregnant, I have $20 and a massive craving. And underneath that post was a picture of Taco Bell. I didn't even know Taco Bell had anything that wasn't meat, you know, didn't have chicken or beef.
Oh, you can get plenty of things. They specialize in beans. I mean, so you can walk into – let me tell you what I did when I went to Taco Bell. The photo is a picture of Taco Bell with a $20 bill underneath it. And I went there to do some damage. you know how much food you can get at Taco Bell for $20? I ended up only spending $9. And here's what I ordered. Okay, you walk in. This is how you have to place your order at Taco Bell when you're a vegetarian. I would like, oh, my God, I'm getting hungry thinking about it now. Okay. I would like a bean burrito, add rice, extra red sauce, a Mexi melt minus the meat plus beans, a cheesy gordita crunch, sub beans instead of beef, potato. Then they have these potato tacos, which was not very good. I don't recommend the potato tacos. And so that's what you order. And then I went back and got another Mexi melt. I think that Mexi melts might be the perfect food ever. It's like a little soft tortilla, and it's like they throw a bunch of cheese and beans and tomatoes in it, and they just microwave it. It's so good.
That is one thing about Taco Bell. You can go there with two people for $10, and you're really full when you leave. They give you
There was three families in there that were just mowing through some food, and you could tell it was either single dads or the wife wanted to stay home, and the husband was like, I'll take the kids to dinner, because there was one table full of like a guy and two or three kids. There was a man with four boys at one table, and then another family, all with the guys. No women were present at Taco Bell, and I'm going to tell you this because I sat inside the Taco Bell and ate by myself. How depressing is that?
Now, did you? Because her husband is gone. We'll clarify that for those that didn't hear. He's away doing some hard work up there in Las Vegas for 2 weeks. Did your cravings go away then? Have you been having cravings for weird, unusual foods?
No, that was the first time I've been like, oh my God, I have to have Taco Bell right now. Actually, I was on the phone with Chad, and he was getting food for the squadron. And he's like, yeah, I'm just out on a food run. I decided to call you. And he's like, the only thing I could find, hold on one second, hold on. Yeah, I need 20 beef burritos, 15 soft tacos. And I was like, where are you? Where are you right now? He's like, we're at Taco Bell in Vegas. I'm like, Taco Bell, I must have it right now.
You don't even have to have
enough. I got the car.
We don't go very often, but you're right. When you get a craving for Taco Bell, you have to go because it's going to stick with you until you go.
Yeah, and what was really funny was that when I posted it on Facebook, a bunch of people were like, oh, my God, I have to have Taco Bell right now. Yeah, now I'm at Taco Bell again. And by the way, they used to only have, because I have been a Taco Bell expert for much of my life, because as a vegetarian, you can only eat at two fast food places, Taco Bell and Subway. So I've been a Taco Bell girl for quite some time. And they used to only have for dessert the little twists, the cinnamon twists.
Oh, the
twists.
Cinnamon.
That was
I don't like those. I never did like those.
Well, my friend, they have a whole new collection of desserts right now, which one dessert included a chocolate chip cookie with icing in the middle and a chocolate chip cookie on top of that. It was divine. That was another thing I had.
He's going to go broke. You're going to go broke with this pregnancy deal. Jennifer, what's coming up
at
today's
Taco Bell is a lot.
On today's Back on Track Wednesday edition, also brought to you by Taco Bell, the crappy list returns, providing the perfect precursor to our weekly jaunt across the pond with the velvet voice of Horse and Country TV, Victoria Spicer. And all jocularity aside, the Horse.com's weekly horse health report this week, cellulitis. So let's hope Glenn's already had breakfast. And speaking of breakfast, celebrate with your favorite light and flaky crust encapsulated delight, because today is National Pie Day.
Oh, there you go. I love pie.
Now I want pie.
If Taco Bell sales go up today, we need a commission. Well, my daily Winnie is for everyone in the frigid winter weather. And I asked this morning, because they're all over the country. Here it was 34 this morning, which is about as cold as it gets in Florida where we are. And I asked this morning people, our listeners, what their temperatures were, and I got a variety of responses. So here are some of them. We have 11 degrees. Becky says it's 11 degrees in Goshen, Indiana, with a wind chill of -3. Barbara says it's 10, feels like -4 in Massachusetts. We have 3 in central Minnesota. Michelle says, or Rhonda says, oh, she's in Canada, says, I converted for the Americans. It is -8 here in Brooklyn, Ontario. Oh, that's cold. And UD says it was 2 degrees this morning in northern Ohio, and the wind chill is -6. And then I don't know if you noticed a little picture I posted this morning, and that was thanks to Lisa, our listener from Ohio. Let me see. She's in where is she at? Michigan, I guess.
Oh.
And did you see the picture of the sign for the town of Hell? And it was all covered in ice.
Hell was frozen over. It reminds me of why you people are crazy and I am sane. I am staying the hizzle out of that. Why would you live there? Why?
I'll tell you what, they're saying the same thing when you're at 120 degrees in the middle of summer.
Yeah, and that's probably true.
Yeah, that's true. They're saying the same thing.
I didn't choose
that. That's true. Yeah.
Well, my daily whinny goes out to one of my new favorite horses on the planet, and her name is Market Quote. Market Quote is a 4-year-old filly that is owned by Pam and Martin Wygod and trained by John Sheriffs. Now, John Sheriffs, of course, the trainer of Zenyatta, duh. Okay, so Market Quote was at Santa Anita. I believe it was Santa Anita. Yeah, yesterday or day before yesterday, and was in her first race ever. And apparently, she'd been showing some really fantastic works, but this is her first race, and you never really expect that much. So Market Quote goes into the gate. The gate bang open, and it scared her to death. She didn't leave the gate for at least 2 seconds. And then 2 seconds in horse world, racehorse world, is a long time. The gate, the jockey said, right when the gate opened, I think it scared her. She hesitated and then started running. Market Quote is running on the field and is 13 lengths off the leader. Mind you, this is her first race. There's no way she's going to win this race, and I don't think many people expect to win their first race, especially when you're 13 lengths behind. But I don't know what John Sheriffs puts in their Cheerios in the morning, because this heifer coming around the backside, she starts picking it up and picking it up and picking it up. And dear God, coming around the turn to the home stretch, Market Quote, they say she unleashed a furious kick, charging on the outside and running down the leader named Top Kisser to win by half a length. The jockey said for her to do what she did and run as fast as she did, it's amazing. He says that John Sheriffs did an amazing job. He was pretty high on her, but I don't think anyone was counting on that. We've got to post this video. I'll see if I can post it on our Facebook page, because, dear God, it's amazing. I mean, just because she's so dead last, she's 4 years old, it's her first race, everything's going against her. And I don't know what John Sheriffs, these horses that are behind, they're like, hey, just run last, and then when you come around the turn, do what Zenyatta did. Just run as fast as you can and beat everybody. So, have you seen the video, Glenn?
Yes, it was amazing, and this horse just seemingly came out of nowhere. She wasn't even in this picture, and just came out of nowhere. And you're right, it did kind of remind me of Zenyatta, the way she ran the other horses down. Just incredible speed at the end.
And the irony of being trained by the same trainer of John Sheriffs, you know, it's just, I don't understand. I don't understand what happened. It's awesome.
You're right, it's those Cheerios. Well, no really bad ads this week. We have a special doggy episode for you on Friday where we're going to be talking all about, we have a bunch of guests coming on, we're going to be talking all about the dogs that we love, that we have here on the farm and that all of you have. So we devote very little time to dogs other than to talking about Janie's when they get out of hand. We're going to do that. We're going to spend a whole episode doing that this Friday, so that's a special episode coming up. But get your really bad ads in for next week to Jennifer@HorseRadioNetwork.com. Well, there was a couple other news stories here. Before we get to my crappy list for Wednesday, I have a good crappy list today, though. One of them was that the Kentucky Equine Survey that they do every couple of years, it's one of the most comprehensive surveys of horses in any particular state, And the Kentucky Horse Council is responsible for organizing it. And the Kentucky Horse Council is probably one of the best horse councils in the country. They're really active. They do a great job. But I just want to talk about a couple.
Hold on. Yeah. Are they the only horse council in the world? I don't think there's an Arizona Horse Council, is there?
Well, that's interesting. There's a National Association of Horse Councils that in Washington, D.C., that oversees all the horse councils. And what they do is they really provide legislative support. They try and lobby the politicians for things that favor horses. And there are supposed to be horse councils in every state. However, you're absolutely right. That is not true. There are not. And so there are about 20 states that have active horse councils, and Kentucky's is just the most active and does the best job of any of them out there. Florida has one. I tried to find him to do an interview, and we couldn't even – it's apparently one guy. So, I mean, that's how a lot of the horse councils are. But survey, and this is just about Kentucky, but I thought it was very interesting, that Kentucky is the home to 242,000 horses, and the total value of the horses and the equine-related assets, the farms and everything to do with horses, is $23.4 billion. And they found that 35,000 equine operations and 1.1 million acres devoted to equine use in Kentucky. Just some incredible numbers, and we all knew that Kentucky is a horse state. I used to live there. We know how many horses there are, but there were just some interesting numbers. And, of course, what would you guess would be the number one breed of horse in Kentucky?
Oh, without a doubt, it has to be thoroughbreds. I mean, that's what they do.
Yep, thoroughbreds followed by quarter horses and then Tennessee walkers, saddlebreds, and then donkeys, mules, and burros. So that was the top there. Now, it's interesting because the leading thing, what I found interesting, is the leading thing done with horses in Kentucky is trail riding. And I think you'd probably find that true in every state. Followed by broodmares, but broodmares were only half of the trail riding.
Kentucky is an amazing place for trail riding. I mean, there's so many places to go and people trailer in. I mean, and you think about it, the racehorse part of Kentucky is Lexington. Then you've got the whole entire state, and gated horses are so popular running around on trails. I mean, I remember living there, and, you know, I would have a thoroughbred out on a trail, and then we'd just get passed by about 9 walking horses continuously.
Yes.
In a group.
And they all were just sitting there nice and smooth, and you're bouncing. Have you ever ridden a gated horse?
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah. And I, you know, as nice as they are on trail rides, I still take a thoroughbred in a second, even a quarter, anything. I'm not a gated horse fanatic at all. Because they don't jump very well, and that's what I like to do. But this is an interesting study because you're right. Almost 80,000 trail horses, followed by 40,000 broodmares. And that makes a lot of sense. I mean, but if you think about the whole state is trail riding, and then 40,000 broodmares is pretty much close to Lexington. That's an amazing statistic. And then horses that are idle was 33,000. Show horses, 24,500. That's a lot of show horses.
Yes, it is. And I thought it'd be interesting, too, you know, horses idle. We do see that. I don't know. You're living in an equestrian neighborhood. I would bet you, and we do, too, and there are about 400 little farmettes here. I would guess that about 80% of the horses here are never used for anything. They're just backyard pets.
Yep.
What about your neighborhood?
Oh, if it's not even higher. I mean, I can't imagine. I can't count the times I've ridden around people's houses and I'm like, man, you know. People have small two-acre places, and they don't have arenas, and you never see the horses leave. The horses are all fat, and to have horses that are fat in the desert, you're feeding them a lot. So it's interesting to try to watch, to see everybody, and these horses that don't do anything. But that's their journey, I guess.
Well, and they got the life. They're just eating grass and hanging out and going, this is the life, man. I'm in retirement. They're not complaining.
Oh, I think they rather have a job.
Almost $1 billion spent every year, and we all know this story, almost $1 billion spent every year for the expenses for horses, boarding, feed, bedding, veterinary, and all of that in just one state in Kentucky. Almost $1 billion every year.
Wow.
So, So there's an interesting study. You know, it'd be neat if every state could do a study like this, because you'd certainly like to know how your state fares and all of that. But that's Kentucky.
It sure would be nice to know, you know, exactly how this works. But 242,000 horses live in Kentucky alone. I would love to know what it was in other states. We need horse councils all over the place.
Well, now there was another, we'll do another story and then I'll get to my list, and we'll have some other stories later on in the show. But the inaugural parade, despite your politics, I don't care about, you know, whatever your politics are, there was a group out of Wisconsin that went to the inaugural parade, and it was a group, a horse therapy group. And they, the tagline for this article is, could you march 2.5 miles in 2 hours in front of a mariachi band and stay calm? So that was the challenge for these three horses from At Ease, a horse therapy group out of Deerfield, and they participated in the inaugural parade on Monday. Well, get this, Jamie. On the way there, they're driving there, they're trying to get there for Saturday's parade. They're 3 hours out of D.C., and the truck breaks down. So they had no way to finish the trip. Apparently, though, three young stablehands were dispatched from Deerfield in a rented truck, and they drove all night to arrive in time to get every person, horse, saddle, banner, and wheelchair to Washington, D.C. and to the parade. So they did make it to the parade after a little angst. But they said that the horses took the excitement of the helicopters and the hundreds of thousands of spectators and the tight quarters and the strange sounds all very well, and they were sandwiched. Why they do this, I don't know. But the group was sandwiched between a band on a float from Alaska, and they said that was no problem. But they had a bit of a problem with the swirling skirts of the dancers and the music of the mariachi band behind them. So apparently the horses were doing some dancing because of the mariachi band. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, I was fortunate enough. When I lived in Kentucky, I was a volunteer for the Mustang Troop, which is we taught inner city kids how to ride on the Mustangs that were BLM Mustangs. So the whole thing was, you got wild kids and wild horses, and we got to go to a couple places like Equitana, and we had a drill team. We made a quadrille out of it, and we got invited to go to Clinton's second inaugural parade. And we've got some wild children that have never been out of basically the hood in Lexington. And we take them to D.C. on horses that are basically wild, that were Mustangs that have been trained and everything. They were prison Mustangs, and then they were trained, and then they've been at the horse park teaching these kids. And we had a kid on every horse, and I think there was 12 horses. And each horse had somebody to lead them. So I was leading one of the kids' horses. And I all of the horses, I think it's just so much for them all at once that they have no choice but to just chill out. Plus the fact when you are waiting to start the inaugural parade, you are in a field for hours and hours. I think you have to get there at like 6 in the morning or something like that, and the parade started at like 11 or 12, and then you have to wait for your time to go. So they line you up, and you get in this whole line that's going forever. And we're standing there with dang 12 horses in downtown D.C. with mariachi bands, all sorts. So, but by the time you actually start the trail ride, the horses are exhausted, just exhausted. And we had plenty of acepromazine on hand to hand to these horses. And every single one of the horses was really good except for one. And he danced the entire parade. But it was because there's
all that poor kid.
It wasn't the kid I felt bad for, it was the person leading the horse. I can't even remember who it was now. But yeah, I mean, imagine the pain in your right shoulder as you're holding onto a horse that is freaking out the entire time, and you're walking 2.5 miles and trying to pretend like everything's fine, smiling and waving. Hi, yeah, thank you. Yeah, I know. He's freaking out. Yeah, it's great. Hello. Welcome. Hello, Mr. President. So you march right in front of Bill Clinton, and, you know, he, like, gives us the thumbs up and winks at – I think he winked at me because he's a lech. But it was a great experience, and the kids had never been able, you know, they didn't ever get to do anything like that. So it was pretty amazing. And it was fun for us. And even though I wasn't the hugest Bill Clinton fan, it was part of the
and it's always
part of the
cold.
Gig.
It's always really cold too. It seems like they always get inaugurated on the coldest day of the year.
Yeah. They weren't thinking. But it was a really good experience. But I think by the time you actually get to the parade, the horses are so overwhelmed with everything, they just stay quiet. Because they're like, if I move, I mean, cause everything is scary, right, left, front, back, everything is scary. Just keep walking, you're in your head down. Try to blend in. Yeah,
I have a crappy list for you today before we get to Victoria with our European report. And this was posted by Sammy Joe, our zebra friend from Texas. And she posted two things. One was this little quote, and I love this. It's just so true. Most people don't need a $35,000 horse. What they need is a $1,000 horse and $34,000 in lessons. Isn't that true? Just love that
so
quote.
True.
The top 10 reasons that farm or ranch trucks are not stolen. Did you ever have a farm ranch truck, Jamie? One that was truly a farm?
My dad's truck growing up, looking back, fit the category in almost every one of these. So go ahead and go down it.
Yeah, we had a Jeep. What was it, Jennifer? Probably a 66 Jeep, that pickup truck. They made very few pickup trucks. And this thing describes this, too. So here are the top 10 reasons that farm trucks are not stolen. Number 10, they have about 20 miles before they overheat, break down, or run out of gas. That is so true, because you never fill up the gas tank in a farm truck. You always put you just got the little 5-gallon gas can. So that's all the gas you ever have in it, ever.
Okay, I just realized that the title is The Reasons They're Not Stolen.
Yes, not stolen. Number nine, the owner knows how to operate the door to get in or out, because the doors never work. You have to do a certain, you have to jiggle it a certain way. You have to take the handle and you have to press it down and then pull it back. There's something about the door that never works on a farm truck.
You have to get in on the passenger side.
Yes.
Climb over.
That's true. Number eight, it's difficult to drive fast with all the fence tools, grease rags, ropes, chains, syringes, buckets, boots, and loose papers in the cab.
Yep.
The cabs are always trashed. And most farm trucks, if you see them, the dashboards have more stuff on it than my entire office has in it.
And my dad's truck had the chewing tobacco cups. So you don't want to take a turn too fast. Oh, yeah.
Plus, if you lost your Coggins test and can't find it, it's on the dashboard of the farm truck. That's where you'll find it. Just look there. Number seven, it takes too long to start, and the smoke coming up through the rusted-out floorboards clouds your vision.
Yeah.
They never have heat or air conditioning either. Neither one. Number six, the border collie on the toolbox looks mean. Dog's always in the back. Number
five.
And they
always have a toolbox on the back, don't they?
Yes, they always do. Yep. Because that's why you have it. It's your toolbox. Number five. They're too easy to spot. The description might go something like this. The driver's side door is red. The passenger side door is green. The right front fender is yellow, et cetera, et cetera. And that is so true. Because they get wrecked. And we had a brand new pickup truck the one time. We bought this new truck. It was a Chevy. And
my first new truck ever.
Ever.
Really?
And what was the first week, Jennifer, we decided, let's just take the hay out with the pickup truck today. So she takes the hay out with the pickup truck, and what does one of the horses do? Come over to rub his butt on the side of the pickup truck, leans back, and puts a huge dent in the side of the pickup truck.
Oh, no.
Yep.
Jeez.
That's why you have farm trucks, because you don't care about the dents.
Oh, yeah.
Number four, the large round bale in the back makes it hard to see if you're being chased. You can use it cracked and covered up with duct tape.
Oh, my truck right now, when you put hay in it, we have to put like 10 bales at a time, and then we have to come in. We don't keep a ton of hay because the storage is a problem on a 3-acre farm. So I buy about 10 bales at a time. We got a place that stores about 20, and I have to then back around the corner of a building dude threw this little chute to try to get it to exactly next to where I unload the hay. And oh my God, you can't see anything. If you're trying to do it by yourself, I'm always afraid I'm going to take down the hay barn. Like, I'm going to take down the roof. I can't imagine driving with a round pail in the back. God.
Number three of the top reasons why farm and ranch trucks aren't stolen, and this is true of every single one of them, is the top speed is what? 45 miles an hour. And that's if you're lucky. If you've got
Maybe.
It slower. Yeah. Because they're only running on about two out of the six or eight cylinders. So they can only go so fast. Or the transmission's about to fall out, one or the other. But our cars could, you know, would do about 45 maybe, but it had these huge tires on them because it was a four-wheel drive Jeep, and it was the old days, you know, the 60s, and if you'd go faster than that, the thing would just pull you every which way. You just couldn't drive faster than that. Number two, who wants to steal a truck that needs a year's worth of maintenance, used joints, $3,000 in bodywork, taillights, and a windshield?
Now, this is that's very true, but there is nothing that is more true than the number one, that when you're living in a farming community, number one takes the cake.
It definitely does. The number one reason that farm and ranch trucks aren't stolen is it's hard to commit a crime with everyone waving at you. Because all the other farmers in the neighborhood know your farm truck. You always know the neighbors by their farm trucks.
Hey. There goes Jerry. Hey, Jerry. Hey, that ain't Jerry. Who's that? You've got to call Jerry. Hey, Jerry, who's driving your truck? I don't know, man. Call the cop.
That's so true. Well, that was a good list. Thanks to Sammy Joe for posting that. Well, we're going to be talking to Victoria from Horse and Country TV with the European Report here in a second. But first, I have to talk to you about Back on Track products. You know, we're going to the ADA conference here this weekend. Jennifer and I are making the trip up to Philadelphia to the freezing cold and going to spend our weekend at the show where all the wholesalers get together with the retailers. And somebody that's always there that we get to see is Bo from Back on Track Products. You know, one of the things we don't talk about very often, Jamie, is the fact that they have a whole line of therapeutic human products. And I had an opportunity the other day. Wendy and I were doing a show, and she was wearing this brace. And I got to tell you or let you hear what she said. Here, take a listen.
All right. Weekend warrior syndrome.
Yes.
Wendy Ying has personal experience. She's sitting here with a weight belt on right now.
It's not a weight belt. It's actually a back on track wrap.
Oh, it is a back on track wrap?
That Randy and Katie Cadwell gave me because
I was
walking around.
One of our sponsors here on the Horse Radio Network.
It's my back on track wrap, which works very, very well because I was with them when I had the back injury, and I think they couldn't stand listening to me
whine
and say, slow down, I can't take big steps. So they gave me a back on track wrap, which I love. I'm now a believer of the back on track. It really made a big difference.
The back on track products really work.
Mm-hmm.
We keep telling people, and they don't listen. They work.
They work.
Well, that was Wendy from the Driving Radio Show. She swears by her back on track products and now has a bunch of back on track products for her horses as well. But they make a lot of human things that we, you know, just don't talk about very often. They make ankle braces, socks, back and neck braces. They make boxer shorts, therapeutic boxer shorts. And I happen to know that Jamie has a pair of those, and that's why she's pregnant now. It was.
Thanks.
Long johns, elbow braces. They even make mattress pads and T-shirts and long-sleeve shirts that all have the therapeutic properties to them. So you can check out the whole line of Back on Track therapeutic human products by going to backontrackproducts.com. You'll find them all there, human, horse, dog, whatever. They're all there. And
yeah,
probably
you're
not guaranteed to get pregnant if you wear the boxer shorts. I'm just saying.
If you want to get pregnant, you got to tell Bo about that so he can start advertising that. Like,
that's
hey,
right.
Cuddle up with a pair of back on track boxer shorts and get your wife pregnant. God, don't tell him that. He'll fire us. He will.
It looks like Victoria is ready, Jamie.
All right. Well, we get to talk every week to Victoria Spicer. And I love this segment because I was thinking about it the other day. I just love finding out what's taking place in other parts of the world, and especially finding out what's going on in the horse world over in Europe. And that is what Victoria does for us. So good morning, Victoria.
Good morning to you both.
Well, how's the connection? Are you, can you hear us okay?
I can hear you perfectly. How's my connection? Can you hear me?
Oh, we'll make it through. We'll make it through. So what is happening? I'd love being reminded that stuff goes on outside of our little bubble, and I'm sure it's probably the same for you. You get so wrapped up in what's going on in your world that you kind of forget that there's a whole world going on out there with stuff, especially with horses, all over the country. Now, oh, hello, puppy.
Sorry, my dog wants to appear on the radio today. He's so bad trained. My horse is the same.
Now, is this your new dog?
No, she does. Normally, she's quite quiet, but I think somebody's walked past her house, and she doesn't like this. She likes to guard the house from any potential intruders.
Well, if any radio show would think it was great, it's our radio show. So, but you've got some actual bad news first, right?
Indeed, a big story that's rocked Britain in the last few days has been the discovery that one of the two abattoirs that are licensed to slaughter horses in the UK, a charity put in a hidden videotape and filmed scenes of abuse, which were just really deeply unpleasant. Various things like hitting horses with iron poles and allowing horses to witness their companions or their field mates be stunned, which is totally against animal welfare laws. It's been a huge story all over Britain. It's been on the main news itself and it's causing understandable distress in the horse world.
Now, with that story, an abattoir, of course, is a slaughterhouse. And I only know that because I'm reading it. What can be done about something like this?
Well, there's now a new campaign by World Horse Welfare, who's one of the leading equine charities, and they're campaigning to have cameras put in slaughterhouses to ensure that this sort of thing doesn't happen. And it's already had thousands of signatures. So the more people who can add their weight and sign this petition would be really helpful.
Yeah, well, can we access that on your Facebook, on your website or your Facebook page?
Yes, we'll repost the story, and it's got the links to World Horse Welfare's petition and also the Hillside Animal Sanctuary, who did this whole campaign and were brave enough to put hidden cameras into this slaughterhouse, and they've also got another petition, so do go and check it out.
And it's, I don't know if people understand how dangerous and difficult that is to walk in somewhere with a hidden camera, especially a situation like that, and to video it. I mean, what has to transpire to get that kind of access in there is, I guess I watch too many TV spy movies or whatever, but it doesn't seem like you could just walk in and videotape it. So somebody did a really good thing by going in there and exposing it.
They did.
Good for them.
Very brave of them.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
It was James
Bond. And
who
can sit there and watch it? Yeah.
James Bond.
Yeah. I'm sure they with him.
Yeah, he'd be too good looking for that. They'd be like, oh, I'm sorry, you need to go. You're not normal. Talk about a little bit of dressage news going on.
Yes, it's a World Cup series at the moment, which is the winter indoors finals. And there's a bit of a shake-up because Adeline Kornelsen's been the kind of the one to beat for the last few years. But now Germany's got a rising partnership. Helen Lange-Hangenberg, easy for you to say, and her horse Damon Hill, they've won the sixth leg of the qualifier. So it might not be all Adeline's weight in the final, and that's not even if you include whether Charlotte Dujardin's going to take part on Vallegro as well.
And how can anybody beat Charlotte at this point? Yeah, it's amazing to even think about that, but good luck.
It just depends on whether Charlotte goes across the final because it is such a European competition and it's not always practical for the Brits to go across to all the qualifiers on the continent, whereas it's a lot easier if you're based over there just to pop into a neighbouring country to take part. So most of the Brits only actually do our qualifier Olympia in December. So she has qualified for the final, I think, but it just depends whether she wants to take him across.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know how that works. But let's see, you've got a... There's a huge endurance race that takes place in Abu Dhabi. And
yes.
It's apparently an incredibly difficult, one of the world's toughest endurance races. And it's called the FEI Three-Star President's Cup. And it's taking place on February 16th. Now, somebody from your country has been invited to go ride, and it's not somebody that you would think of.
No, it's one of our young rider squad members, and she's only 19. So she's one of 12 riders that have been invited to take part, and it's against people that are living and competing in the United Arab Emirates and also members of the royal family. I think Sheikh Mohammed's a very big fan of endurance. He is the husband of FEI President Princess Haya. So, yeah, she's got some tough competition out there.
No kidding. And hasn't she seen Hidalgo? I mean,
I think we should send her the DVD.
We should, because what happens if, like, because there was a lot of people that were, you know, kind of royalty in that movie, and they kept trying to take down Frank and his horse Hidalgo, and he fought through it. But she needs to be made aware of what might happen if she tries to pass one of the royal family members. I mean, come on. We've all seen the movie. And watch out for the big dust storm.
I think it was all to do with Viggo Mortensen having an affair with somebody's daughter or wife or something that upset everybody the most. So hopefully this girl will be out there competing and not getting embroiled in any scandals.
She seduced him, okay? And it was actually not even really something that happened. It was all a mistake, but of course they ended up making out at the end. But, okay, it's not a real movie, but it was based on a true story, okay? So let's see what's happening with the blog of the week.
Yes, indeed, our blog of the week. This time it is from a young show jumper, Anna Edwards, who's a real rising star over here. And she's
good
written
Lord.
About she's written about heading off to Spain and Portugal for the Spanish for the Sunshine Tour, which will be very nice for her to escape the snow. But the main reason to check out this blog is the picture of her horse. He's quite a new horse, and
oh my God,
calls it dusting the rafters. Chesterfield likes to give some fences some air.
He don't like to touch them, does he?
No, he doesn't.
This has to be Photoshop.
No way. That is
a
real picture. She shared it on her Facebook page, and it spread far and wide, and everybody's very impressed. And he just makes it look so easy. He's like, I don't want to jump this fairly huge 1.30 meter fence. I want to jump 1.65 meter and just bounces over the top of the wings.
Okay, for those who are not looking at this, imagine a gray horse heading up to a, I don't know, what do you think that is, a 4 foot, 4.5 foot Oxer, Glenn?
Yeah, that's about right, yeah.
4.5 foot, and it is clearing it where it should be jumping a puissance. Like, it is clearing it by at least 2.5 feet. I mean, this is insane. He's clearing what would be a 6.5 foot fence. So you've got to see this. We got to post this picture, not the link, just the picture on our Facebook page. Jennifer, if you can do that. Holy cow, this is crazy.
Or you can go to Anna Edwards' show jumping page and you can share it from there direct onto your site. She's had thousands of shares already, so I'm sure she'll be grateful to know that her picture has gone viral in the States as well.
Yes, does
this an exception, or does this horse clear every fence by 4 feet?
I'll have to check with her. I think he tends to do it for the first fence on the course. Maybe he just wants to impress the crowd a bit. But, yeah, he's definitely one to watch. And Anna's really interesting because she produced the horse from scratch, and it won our big national class, the Queen's Cup, at Hickstead a few years ago. And her horse got sold to Tina Fletcher, who, of course, is one of our top show jumpers. And she started again. You know, she took some money and she's built up her string. And it's just nice to see her with this real talent. And she's also got another horse called Diaghilev, who's been winning a lot. And she's a young girl. She's in her early 20s. And it's really good to see her, you know, consistently being able to produce top horses.
Now, I don't want to, like, you know, I mean, obviously the horse is jumping very, very high, but usually you would critique the fact that her heel is not down and the fact that her leg is slipped back. But it's amazing she stayed on for this jump. It is just amazing. You can't
she
critique
must be
anything.
Used to it.
yeah, but I would like to tell her that she's not going to win a jump off. It is speed round. This is the way her horse jumps.
So more of a Grand Prix horse, we reckon, than a speed horse.
Yes, definitely. He's not going to make time because he's clearly overusing himself. But no, I mean, what an amazing guy. He just needs to go higher. He just
Indeed.
Wants to jump higher. Imagine a 6-foot fence. Would he clear it to 9 feet? I mean, my gosh.
That's a scary thought.
Well, thanks for that. Let's see. What do you guys have on TV?
We've got episode 3 of a new series on tonight, which is called The Ride, Race Across the Steppe. And we had a series with these guys last year, and it was about them riding a South African trail. They're a pair of South African riders. And now this time they're having a go at the Mongol Derby. So it's a bit of an adventure, and they're a fairly intrepid duo. So if you like long-distance riding or South African cowboys, I think you should tune in.
Who doesn't
like
either one. Hello.
We posted a very cute picture from them today on our Facebook page of a little child sitting on a saddle watching the Mongol Derby, and you think in a few years' time you're going to see that kid taking part in the race. It's very cute.
What is cute is your video of the week. Oh, my gosh. Talk about cute. Oh, God. Okay, it's we got to post this, too, because, oh, it's this little girl, and she's in a beautiful grassy field, and with her is a little mini foal. And it does not matter where this little girl goes. That little mini foal chases her and just snuggles right up to her, and she's kissing it, and she's hugging it, and oh, my God, melt your heart, make you ovulate. Like, that is what it's all about.
It's so sweet. And the expression at the end when they have a little cuddle, it's just so nice. And it just reminds you. I mean, she's so fearless around the foal, and it's so gentle with her. And they are more like playmates. But they kind of grew up together because the foal got separated from its mum, and it ended up being a house horse and living on the kitchen floor. So I think he thinks he's a human, but it's very cute to watch.
Oh, my gosh. It is the cutest thing ever. Why am I not having a girl?
Oh.
Why am I not having a boy?
The next
so
one,
so
Danny.
Much cuter.
The next one will be a girl.
No, this is it. Done. This is it. Oh, so cute. Well, Victoria, thank you, as always, for joining us and letting us know what's going on. I love the segment and just... Thank you, and I can't even think because this little video is so stinky.
Oh, I see my dog barking again now, so I think it must be time for me to sign off. But yes, I'm glad you enjoyed the video, and do have a watch, and it's really, really sweet, and just reminds us why we all have horses and love them so much.
It does. Horseandcountry.tv, check it out, and you can find the video. Search for Best Friends. Of course, Best Friends. Thank
yes.
you, Victoria. We'll talk to you next week.
Speak to you next week.
Okay. Bye, puppy.
But it's nice if we get a Winnie or a bark every once in a while. I mean, we're a show about animals. We should have Winnies and barks every once in a while.
There are four dogs in my room right now. I cannot believe they're not barking.
I know. We don't hear your dogs very often, actually. It's so early in the morning, they're not awake yet. That's what the problem
is. No, they stay in the room with Daddy. They're like, screw you, we're going back to sleep.
Well, we got a song coming up. We got a song coming up for you today from Jared Rogerson that we haven't played in a long time, called "The Same Dark Trail." But first, I want to tell you, I want to remind you that if you go to our website, any one of them, at horseradionetwork.com or horsesofthemorning.com, any one of the websites, you'll find a link on the left for Amazon. And if you use that link and go in before you buy anything at Amazon, doesn't matter what.
if you just come to our website first, click on that link, you takes you over to Amazon, but we get a little bit of a credit for everything that you buy at Amazon. Doesn't cost you any more, just an extra click. But it helps us out, gives us a little bit of extra money to help run the network. So if you like the programming here, that's a free, easy way that you can buy at Amazon and support the Horse Radio Network at the same time. So we appreciate all the support that you can give us. All right, this is Jared Rogerson, The Same Dark Trail, and then we're going to be back, hopefully, with Michelle Anderson of TheHorse.com talking about cellulitis today. And for some reason, it just doesn't sound good for me.
In the darkest canyon, with ghosts at every turn, I'd crossed 1,000 raging rivers and swore I'd never learn the answer to a question I didn't even know. Down the same dark trail, you were traveling alone. 2,000 miles away from home, into the western sunset you did roam, a hard way to go. Down the same dark trail we were lost and found each other. The feeling is so bright, but the lightning and the thunder as they are, confusion clouds a vision of our hearts, we fall apart. Down the same dark trail we were lost and found each other.
Guy not on the radio every day all the time.
I don't
mean
know.
He's so good, and that song is so good. Oh, I mean, it's even produced well. As a music nerd, that song is so balanced and produced so well and sung so great. I just love Jared. And he's hot, too. Like, hello?
Yeah, he has the whole package.
CMT right now. I should turn on CMT and be like, this is Jared Rogerson's latest song, Saved Our Trail. Like, I mean, how is that not possible? Ugh, frustrating. No, we got to listen to some teeny bopper that's singing about her, you know, hangover, you know. That's stupid. Oh, God. Anyway, you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network. Sorry about the tangent there. Today's episode is brought to you by Back on Track Products. Check them out at backontrack.com. And it is that time. Is it time for Michelle?
Not quite ready yet. So we got about 5 minutes.
I can't wait to see you squirm. I can't wait to see you squirm. It's going to be great.
I got
a new story since we got a little bit of time. So there's it's about 2 a.m. in the morning. And these bad guys who are currently living down in Colombia, okay, because Colombia is not a scary place at all. They're in Colombia, and they're nighttime raiding I don't know what type of store it was, but it's an odd thing to steal. But apparently these guys were stealing rum, oil, rice, cans of tuna, and sardines from a shop in the Caribbean town of Juan de Acosta in Colombia. Well, they get everything out of the store that they want, and they take it to their getaway car / donkey. So they have a donkey that they're packing all this stuff onto, and that's going to be their getaway car. This tells you, these guys, poor things, they must have been pretty hungry. So the donkey is, they've stolen the donkey, and they've loaded it up. It's a stolen donkey. They've stolen the donkey. They've stolen everything. They're stealing all the food, all the rum, because, of course, what thief doesn't want to steal booze? And they're about to make their getaway until the donkey starts squealing. I mean, if you've heard a donkey bray,
yes. You
know that it is loud. It's louder than a car alarm. And why is there a donkey braying along a surfside town? I don't know. Something must be going on. So the donkey actually brayed so much and so loud that it alerted nearby police, and the thieves actually fled on foot, left the donkey with all of the food, standing there like braying his butt off. And the shop owner was able to get every single item back that the people were stealing thanks to the donkey. And the donkey's name was Xavi, and he was held at the local police station for 12 hours before the owner, Orlando Olivares, was notified and came to reclaim him. So donkey stolen and then taken to jail and held in prison for 12 hours until they found his owner. Can you believe that? That's a great story.
Donkeys are not cooperative for their owners. You know, anybody knows anything about donkeys knows that you're going to have a tough time. You better be good with animals to get a donkey to do what you want. And there are a couple donkeys that live in our neighborhood, and they're about a half a mile away as the crow flies. And we can hear them once a day, every morning, about 10 o'clock in the morning. They go into this braying fit with each other, and these two donkeys are just braying away, and you can hear them clearly from our house. That's how loud donkeys are when they go braying. They're the braying fits.
We have houses, a couple little farmettes away, and they start braying at feeding time, morning and night. And I swear every morning we do this show, I can hear them outside, and I'm like, oh, they're going to get on the mic at some point. They're going to be so loud that they're going to be heard through the radio show. But it hasn't happened yet because I keep the doors closed when they start screaming. But, yeah, not a great getaway car. Getaway car. Somebody else has stolen donkey. That donkey will sell you down the river in a heartbeat.
We've learned a couple things this morning. We've learned if you're a thief or a robber, a donkey does not make good a good getaway car. Neither does a farm truck. You should use neither one of those. Yes. Yeah. So we've learned a lot.
Consider this an education.
That's right. Well, it's time for this.
It's time for the weekly health report from thehorse.com. Fantastic information and their attempt to ruin Glenn's lunch every week.
That's right. It is time for thehorse.com. We have them here every week with the weekly horse health report. And today, I think we're doing a request. This was a request by one of our listeners. And we have Michelle Anderson from thehorse.com on with us this morning, like we do every week. Good morning, Michelle. We've lost Michelle. Let me try this. Michelle, are you there, Michelle?
I'm here. Hello?
Okay. Phew. Got you back.
Oh, good. Yeah, I've been dropped on and off a couple times now.
All right. Well,
Dr. Finley here?
Yes. We were told that there were some issues this morning with the system, so if you drop off, just call us back, and we'll talk to Dr. Finley in the meantime.
Okay. Well, and we'll give Dr. Finley those instructions, too, because she's new. She's never done this before. But Dr. Finley, are you here?
I am here, yeah. Good morning.
Good morning. So Dr. Finley is here. She's with Bend Equine, which is our local equine hospital here in Bend, Oregon. So I brought a local on with me. But she is here to talk about cellulitis. And as you mentioned, Glenn, that was a request from one of your listeners who has lost a horse to cellulitis, which is very sad.
Yes, that's right. She's a regular listener on with us almost every day, and she was pretty upset about it, and she said she'd like to learn more about it because that was her, I think it was her first experience with that particular horse that then died.
Yeah, which is, like I said, very, very sad. So let's start out, Dr. Finley, what is cellulitis?
Well, cellulitis is another one of those just kind of itis words, which means inflammation of, and it's inflammation of connective tissues under the skin. So everything under the skin and the blood vessels under the skin, and then usually when we're talking about cellulitis, we're talking about a septic cellulitis, which means it's an infection of those connective tissues under the skin. And it can happen anywhere on the body, but most of the time in horses, it occurs in a hind leg.
Right. So how is cellulitis different than a regular infection? A horse gets puncture wound and it gets pussy and we treat it with antibiotics and clean it up. How is cellulitis different than that?
Well, when you have a puncture wound or any wound, really, most of the time, the inflammation and the infection is confined to the wound itself. And for reasons that we don't totally understand sometimes, an infection spreads, and it spreads under the skin, and the whole leg can all of a sudden become affected and have an infection under the skin versus just being localized to the wound. And then, unfortunately, with your listener's horse, probably the infection went on to spread and become more systemic. They weren't able to get it under control, which in rare cases does happen. So that infection spreads under the skin and becomes quite a problem.
So what clinical signs should we be looking for when we're talking about cellulitis?
So it happens really fast oftentimes. A lot of times you'll have reports the horse was normal yesterday, and now today his leg is, a lot of times we call it a stovepipe leg because it's so swollen, there's no differentiation in the joints or anything anymore. It's just a giant swollen leg with severe lameness. Oftentimes owners think that the horse has broken a leg because that's how non-weight bearing they are. So severe heat, severe swelling, they don't want you to touch it. They may or may not have a fever. A lot of the times they're depressed, not wanting to eat and not wanting to move. And then when it's gone on for a little while, that swelling can cause damage to the skin. The skin can actually crack and start oozing from the amount of pressure and the severe swelling. So it can happen really fast. There may or may not be a wound. That's obvious. Sometimes there's an inciting cause, and sometimes there's not. Or sometimes there's just a little tiny scrape that none of us, would really ever be concerned about, but unfortunately seeded the tissues with an infection.
Hey, Dr. Finley, Michelle, one second. First of all, I'm just going to say, ew, to start right there. That's for the rest of this segment, okay? I'm just covering it from the beginning right here. Now, it has to be incredibly painful.
It is. It is incredibly painful. Yeah, that, like I said, a lot of times they won't even put their toe on the ground, and their heart rates are usually, you know, through the roof, and they're not eating and things like that. So it can be very difficult for the horse. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so my next question is going to be, what kind of injuries lead to cellulitis? But you're saying even just like a little prick or maybe nothing at all can lead to this really severe infection?
Yeah, unfortunately. I'd say 50% of the time that I've seen it, I can't find any reason for it. Sometimes it's horses that are prone to scratches can progress to the cellulitis. Sometimes there's an obvious wound or a small wound that you can find. A puncture wound, you know, sometimes puncture wounds are just, we like to call them tip of the iceberg wounds because they don't look like much. But, you know, something went in and out really quickly and then it seals over before you really get a chance to understand that it was something more serious. So it can be anything and it can be nothing. Sometimes it's just the swelling of the limb.
Okay. And you mentioned scratches, and we've talked about scratches on the show and during the past year, but can you describe for those who haven't heard those discussions what scratches is?
Yeah, scratches is basically like an inflammation that comes from oftentimes a mixed infection. So sometimes there's a fungal component, oftentimes there's a bacterial component. And there, you'll find some painful scaling and crusting, usually on the back of the leg, around the coronary band, and swelling of the skin. It can be very painful. And oftentimes it occurs on horses that have white skin, but it doesn't necessarily have to be white. Horses that live in really moist conditions or out to pasture, and so their skin is constantly wet, are a bit more predisposed to it. And then there's a predisposition, a genetic predisposition that we don't totally understand why one horse gets scratches and the other horse doesn't. So it's a localized skin infection.
Yeah. Well, and it's scary that this, you know, scratches, it's kind of this little nastiness on the front of their legs and you kind of pick it and you clean it.
Yeah.
But that it can blow up into this really serious life-threatening issue. So should people be nipping scratches? I mean, it's so frustrating to treat. From my experience, it's extremely frustrating.
Yeah, it is. And I would say that in so rare of a case does scratches actually turn into a cellulitis. It's not something people should be fearing. And scratches should be treated. But that being said, it can oftentimes be a frustrating treatment. I think there's a lot of people out there who try a lot of home remedies for scratches and have never consulted a veterinarian on what might be the best way to go about it. And so we do have some treatments that work pretty well. And, you know, oftentimes we'll talk to people and they've gone through all kinds of crazy things, Listerine and turpentine and all this stuff, you know, to try to get rid of scratches. And there are some good treatments out there. So I would say definitely try to treat it, but it can be frustrating for sure.
So going back to cellulitis, how do we treat this when it happens?
Yeah. So cellulitis is, the mainstay is going to be antibiotics, broad-spectrum antibiotics, anti-inflammatories, so butorphanamine, and sometimes some steroids have to be used. And then bandaging the whole limb, so you have to counter that swelling with some bandaging. And full limb bandaging is difficult to do, and most owners aren't prepared to do it themselves the first time. And then other things like hydrotherapy, so cold hosing or a game-ready system or massage can also be, you know, added things to help the horse through it. But the mainstay are antibiotics, anti-inflammatories, and good bandaging. The thing about cellulitis is it can be very expensive to treat. We oftentimes like to do ingestible antibiotics if possible rather than just an oral SMZ or TMS powder. The very best thing to do would be to get a culture, so where we make just a tiny little incision in the swelling and stick a culture swab in there and send it to a lab so we know exactly what bacteria we're dealing with so we can make an appropriate antibiotic choice. Most of the time it's a staphylococcus type bacteria, but it can be anything, and we may be choosing the wrong antibiotic, which is one of the reasons why people end up losing treating this condition is, you know, you think you've got a nice, good, broad-spectrum antibiotic, but it's the wrong antibiotic, and the infection spreads, and you lose control of it. So some of these horses are really sick. They've become really dehydrated because they have been feeling really, you know, dumpy for a couple of days, and they need to be hospitalized and have some supportive care. So, unfortunately, cellulitis can be a really big deal as far as treatment goes. Most of the time, we're very successful at treating it.
Yeah. So you know, we're very fortunate here in Bend to have your hospital where our horses can go if they need to be hospitalized for treatment. But what about the horse owners who don't have that option or maybe can't afford that option? Is this something that they can treat with their practitioner on their own property?
Oh, yes, absolutely. I mean, there's always different levels of care that can be offered to somebody. You know, there's some, well, here's the gold standard of what I'd recommend because your horse is so sick, I recommend you travel and go here. To, this is what I can offer you on the farm, and oftentimes we just have to do what we have to do. And so if that means trying the oral antibiotic route, then that's what we have to do. I mean, it's just, there are certain levels of recommendation and certain things that we can do. Antibiotics have to play a role. They have to get a bandage on there. They have to get the inflammation down. And sometimes if the horse is really sick, we can run in some fluids in the field. There's always the option of treating the horse in the field. And most of the time, you will be successful at treating it. And there's the handful of cases that the condition will get away from you. Go ahead.
Oh, well, if you have more to add, go on, because I have my next question.
Okay. No, yeah, I think that's all as far as treatment goes. There's,
okay.
Yeah.
So what about prevention? Like, is this something that if your horse gets a puncture wound that you can prevent through taking really good care of that, or is this just something that tends to catch you by surprise?
Yeah. I think it's unfortunately one of those things that tends to catch you by surprise. Certainly, of course, good hygiene and taking care of a wound when it occurs is obviously important, but you can do all of those things and still end up with cellulitis, unfortunately. So the most important thing is that people recognize that they have a cellulitis occurring or starting. It's that it's not just a little swelling, that it's not just the horse stocking up, and that they have a real problem on their hands, and that they get treatment right away. This isn't something you notice on Saturday, and it should wait till Monday to see a veterinarian, because by that time, oftentimes it can have gotten really bad. So prevention is difficult, but prevention of a really major problem when you could have had a fairly simple problem involves getting your veterinarian involved right away and not waiting on this.
You mentioned stocking up, and that's lots of times our horses will get hurt. We'll put them in the stall, we're treating, and they will get stocked up. How can horse owners tell the difference between a cellulitis case and just run-of-the-mill stocking up from being stabled?
Well, generally horses are not lame when they're stocked up. They may be a little bit stiff coming out of their stall, but they walk out of it. And this condition almost always causes a very severe lameness. Like I mentioned, there, you know, you may think the horse has a broken leg or is very painful. So anytime you obviously have a horse that has that severe of a lameness, it should tip you off that there's something very wrong, especially if there's a wound involved. So if you have lameness, if the horse doesn't seem like they're feeling well, you know, I recommend that everybody have a thermometer in their first aid kit at home. Anytime your horse doesn't seem like they're feeling well, be able to take a rectal temperature. If you don't know how, ask someone who can help you with that. And oftentimes this condition, the horses will have a fever, which is a temperature over 101 degrees.
Dr. Finley and Michelle, the listener that asked us to cover this today actually just dropped me a note on Facebook and said, please address reoccurrence. My mare got it back 3 times, and each time it got worse.
Yeah. So that is one of the frustrating reasons this is so frustrating, is that there's about a 25% recurrence rate. And there's a couple different reasons for recurrence. One reason is the infection was never completely gotten under control. So it gets significantly better, but there's still some left over. And that's where the culturing comes into play, knowing exactly what bacteria you're dealing with and which antibiotic is going to be appropriate. Another reason for reoccurrence is a predisposition. So a scar or a wound or something that has changed the circulation in that limb to where the circulation isn't normal. So their ability to fight infection and fight inflammation isn't normal. And then the third reason for reoccurrence is we don't know. And there is still a lot we don't understand about the risk factors for cellulitis. But the first two things, the first thing we can obviously do something about. The second thing is a little bit more difficult to do something about, but if we have a good history on the horse, we may be able to get a reason why. And then, unfortunately, sometimes we don't know why.
Okay. Well, we do on thehorse.com have a great video on taking vital signs, and Dr. Finley, you had mentioned taking a rectal temperature. How to do that is included in that video, along with taking a respiration rate and heart rate, which are all things that can help you get some information together to give your vet when you make that first call. And then also, if you go in the search term on thehorse.com, the search bar, put in cellulitis, it'll pull up some images. These legs are very, very swollen in the cases that we have photos of. Check that out if you want to see what this looks like. And so thank you so much, Dr. Shannon Finley, for waking up early with me here on the West Coast and joining us to talk about this topic.
No problem. Have a good day, you guys.
Thanks.
Bye.
Thanks, guys.
Oh,
talk to you later next week, Michelle.
Okay,
so
bye-bye.
Frustrating. What a frustrating disease. Bye, Michelle. I've had friends that have had horses with this. It's just something they battle all the time, and you never know when it's going to come up, and you never know when it's going to go away. It's just something that they just sadly deal with, and so frustrating. And it's frustrating because there's no known reason for it, really, in some cases. So thanks for bringing that information, and thanks to the listener for suggesting it.
Well, and thank you to Michelle and the doc for not making it totally gross for me, because as I understand it, it can be totally gross. So I'm glad.
Look at the pictures, Glenn. Look at the pictures.
No, thanks. I'll pass on that. Well, let's talk about a couple happy things before we end today. And that, I got to get on my soapbox. You know how you're always on your soapbox when it comes to vegetarianism and everything? Well, I have a soapbox. Well, I got one, too, that I haven't talked about much. But it brings a story that came out this week brings it up. VIA Motors, V-I-A Motors, a company out of, I think it's Europe, is trying to, change the industry by making an electric pickup truck. We've had electric cars, and they've sold so well here in the United States. But apparently they're unveiling at the Detroit Motor Show the X-Truck concept. It looks like a Chevy Silverado on the outside, but underneath it's a plug-in hybrid powertrain. So it works like the Volt, the Chevy Volt, or one of those. There are two 402-horsepower electric motors that power the car. It has a liquid-cooled lithium battery pack, and it has a V8 engine. So it's going to have some power, it's going to have some torque to be able to be a pickup truck, which has always been the problem. But now, this is a problem that I have with all electric cars, is they say you can achieve over 100 miles per gallon on typical local daily driving, which sounds wonderful, right, Jamie? Sounds absolutely wonderful.
Wow, sounds amazing.
Yeah. But what's always the problem with electric cars?
You have to charge them, right?
Yeah, well, that's a problem, too. And nobody talks about how much that's going to cost in your electric bill. Nobody ever mentions that. And then the second thing they don't mention is this particular pickup truck with two 402-horsepower electric motors sucks up a lot of battery juice, and they expect it will get 35 miles. You'll have a 35-mile range.
That's it?
So now, for us to drive to town to, like, the TSC store and back it puts us really close to the 35 miles. So we would be, we might run out coming back into the neighborhood. You know?
Wow.
It's just
35 miles. I mean, you can't, like, talk about, you're taking it on a road trip. And you go 35 miles and you have to stop and charge it up. How long does it take to charge the thing? Does it say that? Like, if it was like
5 hours.
And
I have no math chip, but I couldn't resist on this thing because it's such a bizarre idea. 35 miles on a battery charge. And it says there that the systems to start recharging the battery, in other words, the engine, the fuel engine, starts to recharge the battery when the batteries go down by 25%. So you're going to drive your truck 8.7 miles before it has to start recharging itself using the petroleum. It just doesn't add up. I'm sorry.
The other thing about electric cars that people, you know, people forget about or want to stick their head in the sand is that in this country, electricity comes from coal. A good portion of the electricity comes from coal, some nuclear, but not as much. The power plants keep dying, and they're not being replaced. And so you know, we got a good percentage of electricity in this country that comes from coal. So basically, instead of burning gas in your car, you're burning coal. I just don't get it.
You know what, you guys? I have now realized what I'm getting both of you for Christmas.
An electric car?
Merry Christmas. Here's your electric car. Sheesh.
Okay, I'm off my soapbox now.
What a random tangent. At least mine are usually horse-related.
Well, it's horse-related. I'll use trucks. But I doubt you're going to be pulling your trailer with an electric truck anytime soon.
Oh, my God. Hook up the electric truck. You can go 12 feet.
Yeah, it doesn't say. You know how trucks always get a lot less gas mileage when they're pulling? Here, you're right. You're going to go about 2 miles before that battery dies.
Oh, lucky to get 2 miles if it only goes 35. I mean, think about miles per gallon as far as a truck with a loaded four-horse living quarter trailer. I mean, you get 7 miles to the gallon that way. Good Lord. All right. Good times. Good times. Merry Christmas. Here comes your electric car.
Hey, how's Mitch Washington doing? Do we have any new reports since his bad showing over the weekend in the sloppy mud in Florida?
Well, thank you for asking, Glenn. He actually went out yesterday morning, or 2 mornings ago, sorry, and worked. It was after our show was over, so we're just getting the news now to you guys. But Kathy said that Repo, the trainer, said he looked great. He came out. He's feeling fine. I mean, they inspected that horse with a fine-tooth comb as soon as he ran last in that race. And she says that she thought maybe it was bumping coming out of the gate. I guess he got bumped pretty hard, which he should be used to by now. But because he's gotten bumped really hard in several different situations. But she says that she thinks it must have been the track because it was so sloppy and so muddy, and it was such an uncharacteristic performance for him. And the only other time he's been on a sloppy track, he came in seventh, and that was the Belmont Stakes. So it was a troubled seventh. It wasn't an easy seventh. It was like he barely made it to seventh. So he's just probably, if they were, you know, smart, which they are, they're probably never going to run him again in the mud because he just doesn't do very well. But, he's doing fine. He's back to work and no problems.
What a priss. Doesn't like to get muddy.
Seriously. Like, fancy horse.
He takes his celebrity very seriously.
Yeah, apparently. Don't want to get dirty. Run, his mascara will run.
Jeez,
next they'll be getting facelifts.
Yes, exactly. Hey, really good news just for those of us that ride off the track, thoroughbreds. You know, the Thoroughbred Incentive Program, which is a baby of the Jockey Club. Last year, actually, Jet and I won the best score for an off-the-track Thoroughbred at the Coconino Horse Trials, and we got this beautiful halter, and I only let him wear it at shows because it's so fancy and it's so cool. I'm so proud It was probably, it was better than winning the horse trials, was winning the best thoroughbred. And the incentive program was only slated to be 1 year, but I guess it's been so successful. It received 268 applications for horse show series and has now approved more than 375 shows that it is going to sponsor and create high point awards at Sanks and Horse Shows, giveaway prizes. They've approved shows now, they say, in numerous disciplines, including eventing, dressage, Western, English, pleasure, hunter jumpers, and they're going to distribute more than $100,000 in prize money, ribbons, prizes including saddle pads, stall plaques, coolers, halters, and tote bags, according to the press release. And in addition to awards for shows, they're going to have out-of-competition awards as well. Winners of the Thoroughbred of the Year Award and Rider of the Year Award will each receive $5,000. So just a great thing. If you want to... Yeah, if you want to go see a list, they have a Facebook page at facebook.com/TJCTIP. That's the Jockey Club Thoroughbred Incentive Program. And it's definitely worth a follow, and you can see what's going on. And they do highlight some of the horses that won, and it's just a really good deal. And I'm proud of them for doing that. Go OTTV, baby!
Terrific. Good job, Jockey Club. Well, before we go here today, we're running out of time. I did want to tell everybody that I looked up when Lisa posted, we posted that picture of the sign for hell, the town in Michigan. Well, I looked up, Lisa said there's a website if you want to learn more about hell. There's a website at gotohellmi.com. So, yep, you can look it up at gotohellmi.com. And also, I did look up how it got its name, and apparently there are two theories. And hell is sort of right in the middle of Michigan. And there are two theories. One is the guy that founded the town and all the businesses in the 1800s by the name of George Reeves was the one who brought the businesses in. And it says, soon after Michigan gained statehood, George Reeves was asked what he thought the town he helped settle should be called. And he replied, quote, "I don't care. You can name it hell for all I care." That was one theory. And the next theory is the name became official on October 13, 1841. The second theory is tied to the hell-like conditions encountered by early explorers, including mosquitoes, thick forests, and extensive wetlands. So you can visit the town. It's basically a tourist town. And there's a shop there that you can go to. Has its Hell Country Store. So you can go to the Hell Country Store. There's ice cream parlors and all the kinds of different things. And I'm sure they have great T-shirts. So yeah, there is Hell, Michigan.
Yeah, well, that's interesting to know. There you go. That's your Cliff Clavin moment of the day, courtesy of Glenn the Geek.
That's funny.
Oh, okay.
For all of you... old timers like Jamie and I remember that.
Oh, they replay it every day. Hello.
That's true. I did watch the first Cheers the other day. It was on Netflix. They have all this, the whole thing. And I watched the first Cheers the other day, and it is so funny to see the when you go back an old series like that, that we're on for 10, 12 years, and you watch the first or the pilot episode, how much different and how much better it got as it went along. Because the first one wasn't that funny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just watching the first season of The Office, which is my favorite show now, and just watching how it's morphed into something so much funnier. You always say, if they can make it through that first season, things just get better. But you're right. Yeah, watching where, like, Diane... I've been watching it because it comes on right about my nap time every afternoon. Cheers. So that's why I'm kind of like got Cheers on the brain. But, yeah, watching... Diane drove me crazy. I need the Rebecca years. I can't Diane.
And I didn't realize either that Diane was on from day one. We thought she came in later because nobody liked Diane all that much. But she was on from the first episode had Diane in, and I didn't realize that. I thought she came on later.
Yeah, annoying. I like the Rebecca years. Anyway, this is a ridiculous tangent. So everybody, go ride your horse. Have a great day. Spay, neuter, and geld. And check out Friday's show because we recorded yesterday. It was really, really fun and really, really interesting. So I think it might be one of my favorite shows we've done. How about
that? There you go. Friday's show, going to the dog. See you, everybody.